Welcome. My name's Adrian Beebe, and this is the ninth in the series of podcasts about the village of Kington Langley in North Wiltshire. Now, if you've not heard the name Charles Garnett before, don't worry. Today, few people have. But in 1906, Charles Garnett was the man who bought the decaying Great House, arguably the most striking building in Kington Langley, and poured thousands of pounds into its renovation and enlargement. It took 4 years to complete the project. But what Charles Garnett didn't know was that his days in his new home were numbered. So in this episode, we'll explore the life of the remarkable Charles Garnett and follow the trail of the money that paid for Great House's salvation. You're listening to Memories of Kington Langley.
Episode 9, The Man Who Put the Great into Great House.
When my family and I first came to Kington Langley in 2005 to view a house for sale, a house that we ultimately bought, I have a vivid memory of my first sight of the village. We left the motorway and drove south down the Langley Road, and after navigating the bend by Church Farm, the road opened up to give us our first view of Lower Common. We'd not seen any other village like this during months of house hunting. Ahead of us, the manor house, half hidden by its crumbling garden wall. And to our left, the imposing bulk of Great House. Two regimented rows of windows, an ornate doorway, a roof like an upturned boat. It sounds grand, but 100 years ago, in 1906, it was anything but. After being built in the 1600s for the owners of the Langley estate, the Coleman family, the house had been used as both a factory for weaving cloth and a farmhouse. By the early 20th century, it had fallen into a poor state of repair. Even though it must have been a shadow of its former self, on a fateful day in 1906, Great House caught the eye of a 37-year-old barrister from London, Charles Garnett. Charles and his wife had moved to Wiltshire a few years earlier and had rented a series of properties, including Guyer's House in Corsham, now a hotel, and Rowden Hill House, which stands beside Chippenham Hospital. These were grand homes, a strong indication of Garnett's wealth. Indeed, wealth and privilege were very much the hallmarks of Garnett's life. He'd been privately educated at Uppingham School in Rutland, studying law, then to Pembroke College, Cambridge. He moved to London to become a barrister, working from chambers in Lincoln's Inn Fields. In 1901, age 31, he married Elsie Pennington in Kensington. At the time, he was living in a townhouse in Chelsea. The couple's final London property, 9 Cleveland Gardens, was a 6-storey white Victorian house on a tree-lined garden square not far from Paddington Station. The type of house with below stairs and attic accommodation for servants. Today, an apartment in Cleveland Gardens will set you back £4 million. But London wasn't where Charles and Elsie Garnett's hearts lay. It's not clear why, but they moved west, to Wootton Bassett, Corsham, and then Chippenham, looking for a place to make their home. And in 1906, they found it. Great House. Notably, Elsie Garnett had given birth to the second of their two children that year. Was this why they sought a permanent home, a place to raise their young family? Bringing Great House up to the standards desired by Garnett was a major task. He hired an architect from London and a firm of builders from Bradford-on-Avon and Bath called James Long. According to one newspaper article of the day,
Garner enlarged and completely remodeled the interior, converting it into a mansion whilst preserving the old-world architectural features of the building.
The work encompassed virtually every aspect of Great House and its extensive grounds. According to another account,
even that part, which is the old house, namely the front of the house up to the old porch, which faces south, had virtually to be demolished and rebuilt because of the state it was in.
If you compare maps made before and after Garnet's refurbishment, as seen from above, Great House changes from a C shape to a solid square. A central courtyard has disappeared, and the rear of the house, the eastern aspect with its three gable roofs, is all new. By 1910 or 1911, the work on Great House was complete. The Garnets settled down to family life with a small staff. In the words of the North Wilts Herald,
Charles Garnet had a deep interest in the welfare of the inhabitants of the village. At gatherings held in Great House's beautiful grounds, they frequently enjoyed his hospitality. He was a man of exceedingly kind disposition.
Indeed, it's noted that he spent a large sum of money on Christmas food parcels for hundreds of unemployed families in Kington Langley and Chippenham. But it's 1914 when Charles Garnet really shows his colours, the outbreak of the First World War. At this point, let me introduce you to Ray Alder. Ray is a history enthusiast from Chippenham and a volunteer for Chippenham Museum. He's been engaged in research that shed new light on Charles and Elsie Garnet's deeds during the war. I want to talk to Ray about what he's discovered, but first I ask him how he became involved in this project.
I live in Chippenham. I've lived in Chippenham for the last 30 odd years, and I've got involved in this because I'm a volunteer at Chippenham Museum. I'm one of their researchers and helpers.
By 1914, Garnet was 44 years old. He may have felt he was too old to sign up for military service, but that didn't stop him playing his part.
I think he'd been involved with the Red Cross, and the war came and he thought his duty, you're probably right, he probably felt he was too old to join up. And I believe the first sort of wave of men, they were looking for younger men, and there was some talk of unmarried men as well. But he thought, I'll go and do my duty and I'll go across to France. Apparently, he took his own ambulance. He owned an ambulance and he was based in Ypres, I believe, at the Red Cross Hospital there. And he spent months bringing wounded back from the front and working in pretty awful conditions, really.
Garnet made two lengthy trips to the front at Ypres, driving his ambulance behind the lines. He returned to Chippenham, but he wasn't done.
Charles Garnet, I think, came back after about 9 months, and he then seemed to get involved in the ambulances bringing men to the convalescent hospitals, Bowood and Corsham and Chippenham. So he was involved in that side of things with his ambulance, because ambulances were very, very scarce at the beginning of the First World War. So he arranged that. And of course, his ambulance could only take four men. So what they'd sometimes do is use a lorry from the laundry and convert that into an ambulance for the day to take the men to the hospital.
Both Charles and Elsie wanted to do more for wounded and sick soldiers returning from battle. And of course, they owned one thing that was hugely valuable to these injured men, Great House itself. Ray Alder explains.
It was never registered as a Red Cross hospital. I can find no information about it as a hospital. In fact, it came as a complete surprise to me when I was told that there were wounded soldiers there. But it appears that Mr. and Mrs. Garnet, who were both great supporters of the Red Cross, they decided that they would clear a floor of their house and invite wounded patients to convalesce there. And when the war had started, and of course, everybody thought it was going to be over by Christmas, so the Red Cross had said, we would like properties for convalescent soldiers, so they had somewhere comfortable to go to convalesce, enjoy a bit of peace and quiet while they convalesced in pleasant surroundings, and then they could then go back to war if necessary. So all these houses and all these owners of houses came up and said, well, we'll offer our properties. But a lot of them were never registered. It was a very enthusiastic thing, but there was no real organisation to it. I think what they did, they turned the house into somewhere where the patients who were at Chippenham, or perhaps Corsham or Bowood, any of the hospitals around there, where they could go and spend a few days of relaxation.
So where did the soldiers who enjoyed Great House's facilities come from?
What we found with Chippenham Hospital, and that's the research we did, was that the majority of men came from around the country. The idea of men going to their home area to convalesce soon was forgotten because of the vast numbers of people that were coming back. They were just put onto a train and they were sent to a hospital. The men that came to Chippenham, they would have come from the Bristol hospitals, from the BRI, Southmead, that were military hospitals, and a hospital called Beaufort, which had originally been the mental hospital in Bristol.
After the war, life at Great House returned to normality, and Charles Garnett's reputation in Wiltshire grew. While little is known about his legal career, his civic life is well documented.
Board member at Chippenham Hospital, member of North West Wiltshire Conservative Association, alderman of the County Council, president of Chippenham Sports Club, member of Chippenham Cottage Hospital Management Committee.
As you can hear from this list, Charles Garnett was involved in all manner of local societies and committees. He clearly took the notion of civic duty very seriously.
Member of the County War Pensions Committee, church warden at Kington Langley, member of Chippenham Rural Deanery.
Finally, in 1922, he was made High Sheriff of Wiltshire, a largely ceremonial role supporting the police, fire brigade and the courts. Interestingly, the one civic opportunity that Garnett declined was that of standing for Parliament, even though his local Conservative Association asked him to do so. He was not, he said, sufficiently interested in politics. Two years pass. It's 1924, September. The leaves beginning to turn in the woods around Great House. Garnett, a lover of country pursuits, leaves Wiltshire to travel to another of his properties in Hawes, a small market town high in the Yorkshire Dales. He's going for a few days shooting. He's in good health and looking forward to the trip. Soon after arriving, he's taken ill and is moved to a nursing home in Leeds. The diagnosis is appendicitis. Garnett goes into surgery and the operation is judged a success. And when Garnett's son Christopher visits on 16th September, his father tells him that his recovery is progressing well and he hopes to return home within 6 or 7 days. That same night, while he's sleeping, Charles Garnett dies. The cause of his death is recorded as heart failure. He is 55 years old. News of Garnett's death reaches Wiltshire. The sense of shock is palpable. There's grief too. The Wiltshire Times is moved to write,
"A useful life has been removed from our midst, and there is gone a charming and unassuming personality that appealed to all who were brought into contact with him."
The North Wilts Herald goes further. Beneath the headline, Chippenham's Loss, it says,
"His death has meant an irreparable loss to Chippenham and Kington Langley, for there was scarcely an institution in the neighbourhood with which he was not associated and of which he was not a liberal patron. No appeal on behalf of any laudable object was ever made to him in vain."
At a meeting of the British Legion, Lord Methuen, owner of Corsham Court, says this of Garnet.
He was a fine sportsman and had done splendid service for the country in general and a great deal of work on behalf of the British Legion.
A few days later, Charles Garnet's funeral is held. His body is transported from Leeds to the small town of Arnside in Cumbria, a mile from the coast of Morecambe Bay. From the hill where the cemetery sits, you can see the fells of the Lake District rising to the north. Staff from Great House travel up to join Mrs. Garnet and her children at the funeral. There are many, many wreaths from Wiltshire, including one from the head teacher and children of Langley Fitzhurst School. Intriguingly, it's members of his wife's family who are buried at Arnside, not Charles's own. At the same time, a memorial service is held at St. Peter's Church in Kington Langley. It's a large congregation, including the Mayor of Chippenham and Sir Audley Neild, last of the Neild family to own Grittleton House. According to newspaper reports, when Charles Garnet's will is published, his estate is revealed to be worth over £160,000, which may not seem a huge sum, but converted to today's money, it's the equivalent of around £9.7 million. All of which leads us to a question about which you might be wondering. Where did Charles Garnet get his money from? Yes, he was a successful barrister, but how many barristers can afford to own several properties and invest a small fortune in the refurbishment of a decaying 16th century manor house, and take 9 months away from home to drive an ambulance around French battlefields? At the time of his death, he was already retired. Money was clearly not a problem for this man. So where did that wealth originate? The answer lies just over 200 miles north of Kington Langley, in the small Lancashire town of Clitheroe. It's about one-third the size of Chippenham, and it's known for three things. The old comedian, Jimmy Clitheroe. It's where the jet engine was developed by Frank Whittle during World War II. And it had a lot of cotton mills, including the one owned by Charles Garnet's family. That's right, Charles Garnet was the son of a cotton baron. John Lambert is a local history enthusiast from Clitheroe and a member of the town's civic society. I ask him how important cotton mills were to his town 100 or more years ago.
Late 1800s, say 1870, the population of Clitheroe was 8,200, and there were 10 mills, and they were employing just short of 3,000 people.
So the economy was pretty dependent on those mills.
There were other professions as well, but it's a fair chunk, is that? And also the mills, they looked after the people.
One of these mills, at Low Moor, just to the west of the town on the banks of the River Ribble, was Garnet's Mill. In fact, the village of Low Moor wouldn't exist if not for Charles Garnet's family. The homes there were built by the Garnets to provide accommodation for their workers. In its heyday, in the mid to late 1800s, Garnet's Mill employed 750 people. It had 32,000 spindles, making each week 14,000 pounds of yarn. That's 2,500 pieces of cotton goods. Photographs from the period show a huge six-story building with rows of 40 windows facing the river, two brick chimneys rising in the foreground. So important was the mill to the local economy, the Garnet family had a place at the very heart of Clitheroe's civic life, as John tells me.
They were pretty up at the top sort of thing. Jeremiah Senior and Junior as well, Thomas, James, William, they're all involved. They all did 10 terms as Mayor of Clitheroe, as the office of Mayor of Clitheroe, over 60 years. That's 1837 to 1897. Yeah, so they were well up on the social side and, like you say, the religious side and after the churches and, they invested in the town.
Am I correct? There's still a street named after them in the town, yeah?
Oh, Garnet Road, yeah.
But technology and social change conspired against the Garnets' fortunes. Although their business had been successful for over 100 years, by the early 20th century, the cotton industry in Britain was in trouble. And that applied to Garnet's Mill too. In 1930, 6 years after Charles Garnet's death, his family's mill closed for good. Why?
They're a bit behind. they weren't investing in new equipment. And that was pretty general right through. You know, they had to keep up with the times because stuff was being invented and you know, they were modernising looms and people weren't spending, they went by the wayside. If they, you know, they couldn't produce the new stuff that was coming out. Though some of the mills in Clitheroe carried on up to 1980 and 1988.
By summer 1930, the mill and the village of Low Moor were offered for sale at auction. Machinery was sold for scrap. The villagers clubbed together to buy their own homes, but for the mill itself, there was no offer. It was later demolished and replaced by a housing estate. 1 year later, the great Indian leader, Mahatma Gandhi, paid a brief visit to Clitheroe to see for himself the Lancashire cotton mills and speak to their workers. As for Charles Garnett's widow, Elsie, she lived until 1957. Kington Langley villager Betty Bird spent part of her childhood living in the staff cottages at Great House. Her father was employed there as a gardener. I ask her about her memories of Elsie Garnett.
Well, you had to mind your P&Qs. You know, you had to behave properly. You had to speak properly. She was a lonely person. Her daughter was in Kenya. Her son was in London. She's on her own in the big house with a maid, Mabel Scratchley, and she had a cook. There was another person there, Annie, and that was it. She was on her own in the big house.
After Elsie's death, her son, Christopher, known to the servants as Mr. Kit, sold the house to the charity founded by Leonard Cheshire, a distinguished former RAF pilot who had been one of Britain's observers at the atomic bomb's detonation over Nagasaki. Why, I asked Betty, did Christopher Garnett do this?
The reason Mr. Kit was getting rid of Great House, he liked shooting and all that. And of course, there wasn't much land attached to Great House. All the fields had been taken over during the war. Well, Mr. Garnett had somebody who wanted to buy it, but he wasn't keen on having that man living in his mother's house. And he was at his solicitor's office, and Leonard Cheshire came in, and they were talking at the solicitor's, and Mr. Kit said, I have a house down in Wiltshire. If you think it would be any good for your people, you can have it. And he gave it to them on a 50-year thing. They couldn't get rid of it and they couldn't do anything with it, like to sell it or anything, until after 50 years. And they did it 52 years after.
And this is where the Garnett family's involvement with Kington Langley ends. Today, Charles Garnett's Great House, a monument to the might of the Lancashire cotton industry, sits empty, surrounded by scaffolding and builders' hoardings, its future uncertain. One thing that does remain unchanged is Charles Garnett's reputation. It remains intact and untarnished by history. Ray Alder agrees.
Charles Garnett, I think, is an incredible man. He seems to have been involved in an awful lot of local activity. He gave not only a lot of money, but a lot of time. He was involved in so many things in Chippenham. He was a governor of the school or college. He was just a very giving man. I found nothing negative about him.
One footnote to the story of Charles Garnett continues to intrigue me most: his relationship with his family. While his brother remained in Clitheroe to run the family mill, Charles left for his education and then London. And when Charles was buried, his wishes were not to be interred in the family plot near Clitheroe, but on the borders of the Lake District alongside his wife's family. What did this highly educated barrister and landowner make of his Lancashire roots? There's nothing documented, but I can't help but wonder if some gulf opened up. We'll probably never know. Charles Garnett's Great House still stands on the fringes of Kington Langley at the junction of the B4069 Swindon Road and Lower Common. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. This has been Memories of Kington Langley. Goodbye.